Hey everybody, it's Andy. I want to tell you about something I am so excited about. On August the 14th, I'm launching a brand new and unique series entitled Who Needs God? If you have ever questioned the existence or perhaps the relevance of God, or if you have friends who question the existence or the relevance of God, this is the series for you. This is the series for them. To find out more about the series, you can visit whoneedsgod.com. Whoneedsgod.com. So mark your calendar. The series begins August 14th. I'll see you there.
I love games. I hope you do too. We're going to talk about games in just a moment. But before we get there, I do want to say, for those of you who are at any of our churches, just want to say hello for one. My name is Clay. I'm the lead pastor, the campus pastor at North Point Community Church here in Alpharetta. So wherever you are right now, we are so glad to be with you. We're so glad you're with us. This is a fun use of technology for us to get to be connected all together. On August 14th, in 2 weeks, we've got an amazing series that is going to be launched, and we're so excited about it, we're already promoting it because we think it's going to be just that great. It's called Who Needs God? I think that's such an intriguing title. If you know someone who maybe is skeptical about faith or maybe is maybe even antagonistic towards Christianity, this is going to be a fantastic series for them. Andy seems super excited about it. On your way out today at all of our churches, you're going to be handed one of these clings, and we would love for you to put it to use. And that means not putting it in the trash can. So we would love for you to put it on a window, on a mirror, maybe on your car, maybe on your computer, attach it to somewhere to let people know about this brand new series that's starting August 14th. Make sure that you put that on your calendar and make sure that you're a part of that. It's going to be fantastic. We are in this series about games. I hope you like games. I don't know how you feel about games. I love games. Any game. I love Balderdash. I love Taboo. I love Cranium. But I love active games as well. Baseball, golf, tennis. I would play cricket if you said, let's go play right now. I'm in, okay? And I love games because I love what you learn. I love how much fun. I love the competition of it. I love the strategy of it. I love this little phrase. You know what game this is from? You will learn about life when you play the game of life. Anybody? Well, I've got it in yellow, so that's pretty clear. But it's the game of life. You remember that game? I don't know, maybe you played it when you were a kid. Does anybody remember the little commercial that sang this jingle? The game of life, the game of life. You'll learn about life when you play the game of life. I think that's how it goes. It predates me, but it's a fantastic little jingle. I love it. But I actually love what this says. I think this is really true, that you do learn about life when you play games, right? I mean, you learn a lot of things. You learn a lot about other people, right? You may be known as a cheater when it comes to games. Anybody just want to go ahead and admit it right now? You're like, that's me. I cheat. Well, thank you to the two people right here in the middle. I'm sure there's loads of hands everywhere else, but we're going to work on hypocrisy here for a little bit. But I love this quote right here because it's so true. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And I think Ricky Bobby said that. So I didn't know who to attribute that to, but it sounds like something he would say. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. But I do think this is comical because of what you learn about other people when you play games. The danger of games is that there certainly are arenas of life. There are areas of life where games are more acceptable than others. One particular area of life that we've been talking about in this series where games just are not that helpful is the area of relationships, right? Why is that? Well, because in a relationship, you want to win-win, right? You want to win, and you want the other person to win. But the whole point of games is that there is a winner, and then there is also a loser, right? To quote our good friend Jim Carrey. Exactly. In relationships, we want to win-win. But games, though, games are played with opponents. Relationships, however, are meant to be played with partners. If you and your coworker want to have a good relationship, you're going to have to partner together. If you and your spouse want to have a good relationship, you're going to have to partner together. You and your kids, there's a partnership in a relationship. And that's the danger, just one of the many dangers of playing games in relationships. And so what we've done in this series, in light of all the games that are around us is we've been looking at some of the games that we naturally play in relationships. One of them that we started with is the change game. We play the change game in a real fun, interesting way. We play the change game kind of secretly, covertly, subtly, right? You try to stay under the radar. The whole point of the game is that they would never find out that you're even playing the game. And then one day, all of a sudden, they would wake up and they would be changed to look more like you, right? That's the beauty. That's the fun of the change game. We talked about what to do about that. If you missed that, we'd love to invite you to go check it out. Part one of the series. Then the next week, we talk about this right here. The blame game. We talked about the danger of blaming other people, that when you blame in a relationship, the problem is that you stay the same. It actually stunts your growth, stunts the growth of the relationship. It's fantastic, fantastic idea in week two about the blame game. This week, though, we're going to look at a different game, obviously. I've struggled to figure out, to determine what to call this game. And so I landed on this, which is not the best title, but It hopefully will work. We're going to talk about the mind game, okay? Why the mind game? Well, because the game that we often play are mind games. We play these mind games with each other. That's the game. That's what the whole game is about. But good news for those of you that are already annoyed that I called it the mind game. I'm not going to call it that anymore. We'll just, for simplicity's sake, we'll just call it mind games, all right? So here's kind of a definition that I want to use for these games. When a sender uses calculated psychological communication to gain a competitive advantage over a receiver, that's what a mind game is. And yes, there will be a quiz at the end, so make sure you take good notes. A mind game is something that you do, a strategy that you employ, a calculated psychological game that you play to try to influence someone else to believe something you want them to believe or to do something that you want them to do. I want to use this board just to illustrate this for just a moment. So we'll start with just pictures of me and you. So I'll let you decide which one you want to be. This is, no one has a boxed body, I don't think, like that, but I don't really promise to be a drawer, you know. Y'all remember that Saturday Night Live skit? Well, hello, my name is Simon, and I like to do drawings. This is somebody else right here. I'm not going to say who this is. You know, this is not my wife. I mean, I wouldn't draw my wife like this, but she doesn't have a triangular figure either, but that's a weird figure. But anyway, in this case, we have a sender. And then we have a receiver, and that word is very easy to misspell. So it's the E after the C that's so tricky, right? The way I want to talk about this today is I want to talk about the sender. I want to talk about the one who is sending communication, and I want to talk about the receiver, the one who is receiving communication, to gain some kind of competitive advantage over the other person. We've all played mind games. Let me tell you, where more mind games are being played in 2016 than any other area of life. The more mind games are being played on this device. You guys, you know what this is, right? I mean, this is where you watch Netflix, you keep your calendar, you send email. This is where you play Pokemon Go or Candy Crush, whatever your fancy is. This is where you text message friends, right? This is where you maybe set up your Starbucks order or whatever food order you might try to do. Weirdest thing happened to me the other day. This thing started ringing. I don't know, what in the world? And I answered, hello, what? You know, and somebody was like, hey. And I'm like, what are you doing? And they're like, I'm calling you. I'm like, yeah, don't do that. Who calls people on these things anymore? So weird and outdated. Anyway, I have noticed that probably the greatest field, the greatest pitch, if you will, in regards to mind games are found on our messages app. Have you ever noticed this? I mean, the text messaging, it really is all about mind games. Let me just give you some examples, okay? So let's say you get a text that reads like this. Invited my mom over for dinner tonight. Hope that's okay. Boy, that's a fantastic text for a lot of people to get, and others not so much. But so, what about this reply? Great. See, implicit in that is a mind game, right? Some of you are like, they forgot the punctuation. No, they did not forget the punctuation. No, the lack of punctuation is saying way more than the punctuation would actually say. Is it not? Because you see, this is a totally different text. If somebody said, invited my mom over for dinner tonight, I hope that's okay. Great exclamation point. That's very different. That is very encouraging, very clear. We're done having the conversation. Fantastic. I got it. No mind games. Here's another one. Hey, okay with you if I play golf on Saturday? Some of you have made the mistake of trying to enter into this mind game. There are no winners in this mind game. Unless you get this response. Of course, that sounds fun. Which has never happened in the whole history of humanity. This is a pipe dream, y'all. Even in heaven, the answer to this question will not be this positive, all right? No. A more common response to this text would read like this: whatever you want to do. In other words, you're welcome to go play if you're willing to put up with what you're going to have to put up with by going to play. That's what that means. Last one. So sorry, but I forgot to fill up the car. Fine. Oh, that's fine. No problem. That's fantastic, right? And that would be wonderful. But when you get this text, you just don't know how to read it. Fine. No punctuation. You know, fine is the most cryptic text message possible, except for, and some of you know where I'm going with this, except for the letter K. I do not, K sends me in an emotional whirlwind. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know if you're in a hurry and you don't have time for me, because that literally is the least amount you could have done other than not respond. K could also be just wonderful, terrific, fantastic. Or K could be, I'm not cool with this at all, and we're going to talk about this later. You don't know how to read it. At least this, let me give you another option. This would actually be more clear communication. Sorry, but forgot to fill up the car. Fine. I'm sure you remember to record the Kardashians. That would be, at least it's clear, you know? At least there's no mind games here, right? Now look, I want to talk about a specific mind game, okay? I want to talk about one particular set of mind games. See, when it comes to the sender and the receiver, there's two different mind games going on. There's mind games here that the sender is sending, hoping you'll pick up on something and figure it out. And then there's mind games on the receiving end, right? Where you're trying to figure out what they're saying, okay? Now, you got to pay for this kind of advice, all right? And what you're getting here today is free, and it might be worth that, okay? So we're not going to talk about this one. I don't know what to tell you there. We are going to talk about this one, because I feel like this one is something that we can do something about. What do you do? What do you do when you're on the receiving end and you're having to make a decision, an assumption, you're having to make an assessment, you're having to make an interpretation about what you're getting? That's the way I want to define our conversation today: the receiver's interpretation of the sender's communication. I want to talk about that game. The receiver's interpretation, the way I'm interpreting the communication that you are sending. So, for the sake of our conversation, let me try to explain it this way. In our scenarios for today, there will be an action, right? Or we called it communication. And sometimes it's lack thereof. Sometimes it's what's not being said. And then over here, there is a feeling, right? I'm now feeling isolated, or I'm now feeling frustrated, or I'm now excited. And what we do, the mistake we make, is we directly attribute the feeling to the action that we perceived. We see something happen, we hear something, we receive some kind of communication, and we think, oh, that's why I have the feeling I have. But we all know there's a gap here. You guys have been to London, the homeland, right? What do they say at the train station there? Yeah, they say mind the gap. K, our British friend that volunteers with us, I was trying to get this right today. I was saying, "Moind the gap." And she was like, "It's not moin. Why do you say it like that?" I don't know. It's just me trying to have a British accent. But yeah, we all know this gap is really important. This is a very important gap. And what's actually in this gap is just this itself. It's your mind, right? It's your brain. Some of you are like, "Is that a manatee?" I don't know, all right? I don't have really drawing skills, but our mind, and here's our word again, our mind makes an interpretation of some kind of action, interpretation, there we go. Our mind makes an interpretation of the action. Now, let me ask you a question. How often do we interpret incorrectly? Have you ever been interpreted incorrectly? Well, sure. So someone got all worked up about something that you said, and then they talked to you about it finally, and you're like, whoa, what? Where did you even get that? And they're like, and then you went, and then you didn't, and you're like, oh my goodness, none of that was connected. I am so sorry. See, sometimes when we guess, we are often wrong, right? I mean, come on, you know that phrase about what happens when you assume. You know what happens when you assume, right? You make one out of you and you make one out of me. That's the whole problem with it, which I think is actually very true, because when you just assume, we create a negative interpretation for what's happened. We make an incorrect assumption about the behavior, the communication that we're receiving, and you actually damage your own self and you cast the other person in a negative light as well. See, the interpretation, this is why today is so important, in case you really do need to roll or you close your computer or you end up falling asleep. The interpretation we choose of the behavior we perceive will determine the distance we have between us. Dave Matthews sang about the space between, right, on Under the Table and Dreaming. This is what he's talking about, is that between you and I, there's a space. And the interpretation that you choose of the behavior that you're perceiving will determine the amount of space, the distance between you and the person that you have a relationship with. You know this to be true, I'm sure, but a negative interpretation, what does it do? It widens the gap. If you choose, because we are choosing, you have an option between a positive interpretation and a negative interpretation. That was wonky, but you have the option to choose. And if you choose a negative one, you are widening the gap between the two of you. But what about a positive interpretation? What about a positive interpretation that's wrong? Even still, I think, We can have a discussion about it later if you would be interested, but I think a positive interpretation actually closes the gap. It actually brings us together. It makes us feel closer. It at least makes me feel closer to you. Now, this isn't just this isn't just me. This isn't just information that I myself have read or learned. No, this is something that we learn when we look at one of the greatest pieces of literature of all time, the Love Chapter, right? Not written by Barry White, but written by the Apostle Paul. And see, some of you are going to hear this. I'm going to read through what he says about love, and you're going to hear that, and you're going to go, "That sounds familiar." And for some of you, it's because this was read at your wedding, and this might be the last time that you heard it. But what he says inside of this is so powerful in regards to our relationships. Here's actually the way he ends the whole idea. He says this. You've probably heard this before. "So now faith, hope, and love abide, these three. But the greatest of these is love. Sorry, faith. Sorry, hope. But you were second and third runner, or first runner up and second runner up in this case. It's like he's playing a would you rather, you know? You remember those? Maybe you played them when you were a kid. We play them with our kids. I've spent a lot of time in student ministry, so I've been around a lot of would you rathers. You know, would you rather faith, hope, or love? Which one? Or in our case, we would say something like, hey, would you rather whenever you smelled anything, it smelled like Cool Ranch Doritos, okay? Some of you are like, I'm already in. Or would you rather whenever you sneezed, it sound like a strike in bowling? That would be kind of crazy. Or, wait for it, whenever you were to sweat, you would sweat nacho cheese. Which one do you want? Well, that doesn't even really work. It breaks down because sweating nacho cheese is clearly better than all the other options. I mean, how amazing would that be? Some of you are like, oh yeah, I mean, even that would get me back in the gym, you know? Some of you, though, are thinking, wait, are we talking nacho cheese or queso? Because that's a very important distinction, right? I'm getting off course here. Nonetheless, he says, hey, this is a would you rather. Which would you rather? Would you rather faith? Would you rather hope? Would you rather love? And he says, well, clearly, everyone would prefer love. Love is just more powerful than faith and hope. Why? Why is love the greatest of these? Some would say, well, it takes faith to initiate a relationship with Jesus. It takes hope to long for eternity. But love is what we need here on earth to really make relationships work. And that may be true. Maybe love is the greatest of these three because God is described as love. God is love. God has perfect love for us. Maybe some of you have struggled with that concept because you think, no, God can't have love. He can't have perfect love for me. If you knew my past, if you knew what a mess I am. But the truth is that God loves you exactly as you are, not as you should be. God's not waiting on you to get your life cleaned up. God loves you as the mess that you are. He loves me as a mess that I am. That's astounding. That may be the most powerful truth in all of life. That there's a vertical concept to love, but there's also a horizontal concept of love, right? I mean, Jesus said, by this they will know that you are my disciples. And what was he talking about? The fish on the back of the car, right? He's like, when you put that on your car and are zipping around town, that's how people are going to know that you're with me. No. He says, no, by the way you love one another, that's how you're going to be set apart. So there is something remarkably powerful about love. If you don't consider yourself a Christian, let me just tell you, this is still an encouragement for you. I think you should try this. If you are a follower of Jesus, this is not just an encouragement for you. This is an assignment for you. God has assigned this to us. He has said, hey, your relationships should look like this. And so here's what the Apostle Paul says about love. He says in chapter 13, verse 4, love is patient and kind. It doesn't envy or boast. It's not arrogant or rude. It doesn't insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but it rejoices with the truth. And then you can feel him building up to this beautiful ending. He says, love bears all things. It believes all things. It hopes all things. It endures all things. Love never ends. I mean, just imagine if your relationship looked like that. Your relationship with your coworkers, your relationship with your spouse or your girlfriend or boyfriend, or your relationship with your kids, your relationship with your parents. Imagine if that is how the relationship worked. Wouldn't you agree? Yeah, I think he's describing the best way to live. But I want to zero in on three words right at the end here, because it shines a light on what we're talking about today. Here's what he says. He says, love believes all things. Love believes, love trusts, love always believes in every scenario. That seems really hard to do, right? Let me just give you some other examples of what it seems like he means by this. What does he mean by love believes all things? Love gives the benefit of the doubt. Love says, I know what I saw, But I'm going to choose to give him, I'm going to choose to give her the benefit of the doubt. Love assigns the best, most pure motives. Love says, I know what happened, but I'm going to choose to assign a positive motive to what I saw, what I experienced. Love is most generous with its interpretations. When the mind is checking out the action to try to figure out and spit out the feeling, love is most generous with the way it interprets what it sees. Another one. Love is innocent until proven guilty. Have you ever known someone who's quite the opposite? Everyone they know is guilty until they're proven innocent, right? I mean, sometimes that's a personality type, but I don't think it's love. I think some of you, it just is more challenging because of your wiring or because of what's happened in your past. But I think we could all agree on the fact that, yeah, the best way to live would be to deem someone innocent until they're proven guilty. And even if they end up being guilty, love bears all things. Love endures all things. Love's not leaving. Love does not suspect another unjustly. Love is not suspicious. No, love believes all things. There was some research that was done a few years ago that I think was so interesting because it gives so much evidence to this idea that the Apostle Paul is laying out. There's a guy named Marcus Buckingham who he knows about minding the gap because he's British. And Marcus Buckingham wrote this book called The One Thing You Need to Know. It's actually a leadership book. But in the first chapter, he says, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about, how there's one thing in all areas of life that you really got to pay attention to. And he says, let's talk about marriage. He said, the way research has been done for year after year after year, we've looked at bad marriages, we've tried to tell people what they should avoid. But he said, this new group of people, and it was written about in this Journal of Experimental Social Psychology, these researchers did qualitative research on great marriages, great relationships. People that said, yeah, I'm very satisfied in my relationship. They had researchers from multiple universities all over the United States, a few of them in Canada as well. And they chose to focus on these positive relationships, said, what's true about all these? And they went into it with the assumption that, well, I would imagine that in marriages that work really well, each person has an intimate knowledge of the other person's strengths and their weaknesses. They have this depth of knowledge about each other, and that's what makes the relationship work. But they actually found something that was quite to the contrary. They found that the secret sauce, the thing that made the satisfied marriages work, were that in every case, the husband rated the wife's strengths higher than she even saw her own strength. And the wife rated the husband's strength even higher than he rated his own strength. I mean, imagine that. Imagine if you thought your husband was actually a better driver than he thought he was. That, some of you are like, that would be a modern day miracle. But they said, no, this is the best kind of relationship. They said it's actually true that love, in a sense, really is blind. And the word they used was, it seems like love is delusional, which is a pretty strong word considering the fact that the average age, the average amount of time these people had been together was 10 and 11 years, somewhere between 10 and 11 years. So they weren't honeymooners, right, who had delusional love for each other. And this is what they went on to say. The researchers opted for more measured terms, such as positive illusions, I love that term, and benevolent distortions, that's fantastic, and idealizations. That they resorted, instead of saying, no, it's not delusional, it's better than that, it's actually positive illusions, right? But you're like, isn't that kind of a delusion? Well, I don't know, it may or may not be, but it's a benevolent distortion. It's an idealization. In other words, over time, these positive illusions that they had for each other, they ended up spiraling upward in love, right? You've seen a relationship that has spiraled negatively towards demise. Well, in these satisfied relationships, there was the same kind of spiral, but it was a spiral towards good. That the the illusion that I created of you created this conviction. And the conviction that I have about my spouse, that I'm doing the right thing and I got the right person and she is just right for me, it leads to this security. And the security fosters this kind of intimacy. And then the intimacy reinforces the love. This is what the researchers found. And so what Marcus Buckingham said is, he said, so this is the big idea. In relationships, the way relationships really work is when you find the most generous explanation for each other's behavior and then you believe it. You find the most generous explanation for your boss's behavior and then you believe it. You find the most generous explanation for your kid's behavior and then you believe it. For your spouse's behavior, you believe it. In other words, when there's an action that happens and your manatee has to make a decision about what that action is. That is a weird looking brain. It's like a potato that's kind of been warped. Anyway, you make an interpretation, a positive interpretation that leads to a better feeling about the relationship. And what it does, when that happens, it actually brings a feeling of closeness between you and the other person. So what I want to do is, I thought, well, let's just use an example. Let's just make up an example. So this is not an actual example that's happened in my life, but this is something that I just made up for our time today. So let's say my wife walks into the living room and she says, hey, are you going to cut the grass today? Now, is this an innocent question or is this a guilty question? It's guilty, 100%. Come on, people. This is a softball. No, the whole point of this is that the question, if we're going to quit playing the mind games, all right, is she playing a mind game? I don't know. But as I said before, that's for the sender's conversation. We're not going to talk about that one today. On the receiving end, how I interpret this question is going to make all the difference in our relationship. So what I want you to do, wherever you're sitting, any one of our campuses, I want you to just think about what would a negative interpretation of that question be? Would she call me lazy? I mean, she's saying that I'm lazy. She's saying that, oh, I don't do enough around the house. Is that what she's saying? Oh, she's saying that the HOA has sent her a secret little note and said that we're not meeting inspection and therefore we got to do something about our yard. And so our whole family's reputation is at stake because I let the grass grow 2 centimeters above where it actually is supposed to be. Oh, I'm sorry that I'm the one who's wrong here. You know what? Why don't you do this? Since that was such a chauvinist question in the first place, why don't you just go cut the grass? Some of you are like, you are sick. But it's innocent questions like that sometimes that ruin our relationships, isn't it? See, what would a positive interpretation of that question be? I mean, maybe she's not even playing a mind game. Maybe a positive interpretation would be no interpretation at all. She's just simply asking, are you going to cut the grass today? There's nothing behind it. That at least has to show up on the radar of potential options. Right? A positive interpretation might be, this is amazing. Like, she is planning a party for me and she wants to see what my day is like, to know where I've got things scheduled because she's got tickets to the Styx concert. Hello, this is going to be amazing. I can't believe this is fantastic. You know, maybe a positive interpretation would be, you know what, if you would like for me to cut the grass, of course I would love to cut the grass because you do so much around here anyway. I would love to do that. I mean, yes, I had just sat down on the couch and was about to veg for the next 4 hours in front of this trilogy or in front of this golf tournament or in front of this football game, but yeah, for sure, I would love to be able to get to that because I love you so much. That's another positive interpretation. Some of you that have been married for a while are like, now you're getting it. That's how you make it work. But isn't it true, though, that your interpretation of that question, my interpretation of that question, really will make or break the relationship? How you view that action will spit out a feeling that will either spiral your relationship into something good or spiral it into something worse. So, a few takeaways for all of us on what the Apostle Paul was saying about how love believes all things is, the first thing is, you and I need to at least admit that our interpretations lack information. Can we just get there? Can you get to the place where you at least say, okay, I can at least say, I I'm sometimes wrong. What'd you say? I am sometimes wrong about my interpretations because we don't have all the information. There might be something that I don't know that is causing the behavior that I am interpreting. It doesn't make it right, but it at least is a positive interpretation. If I can just admit, you know what? I'm sure there's probably something that she knows, something he knows that I don't know. And if I knew, it would make more sense. And then that you and I would choose to believe the best. The best what? The best explanation. The most generous explanation. The best interpretation we can come up with of what's really going on here. What's really behind the question or the behavior that I'm perceiving. And then some of you are sitting there going, what about when all of their previous behavior gives evidence to the negative interpretation that I have? I mean, if I had to defend this negative interpretation in a court of law, I would dominate because everything they have ever done proves the interpretation that I have. That may be actually true. And if that is true, I still think a great thing for any one of us to do is to ask directly when you just can't find it in yourself to believe. Because that's not what most of us do, wouldn't you say? Most of us go and ask our friend what we think about the behavior that we're seeing, right? And then we go tell all our other friends to get them on our side. And then eventually we build up so much negative interpretation, nothing they can do is right. And it ends up rotting and eroding and ultimately destroying the relationship. That's what most of us do. But what if you were to approach the person and say, hey, I'm feeling this way. I'm assuming there's something I don't know about. Is there more to it? Is there something I'm not seeing? And what you might find out is something that might actually help the relationship. What I know, though, is that the interpretation we choose will determine the amount of distance between us. The interpretation that you choose towards me and that I choose towards you will determine the amount of space between us. And you can either create a gap or you can close the gap with the generous explanation. It's your choice. I'm just telling you, I really believe in your relationship at home, your relationship with your kids, your relationship with your parents. Are there outliers? Of course. And if you're dealing with someone who is an abuser, who is an addict, it's a very different conversation. But maybe with your boss or your coworkers, this is the thing that might just change everything. And then there's some of you have actually been playing this game with God. I mean, you've assumed some things about him. You've made an assessment about him based on what you've seen. You've interpreted what you feel like was from him, and you have negatively interpreted it. And it's cast him in a bad light. And maybe the greatest thing you could do in your relationship with him is to choose a positive interpretation of what you see. Maybe he's not keeping something from you. Maybe he's keeping you from something that ultimately is going to harm you. Maybe you've created a pattern, and maybe there's a new pattern that you could choose that would lead to a deeper relationship with your creator because he loves you and you can believe that because he's proven it. He sent his son to die on a cross for you so that he could have a relationship with you. And I think this might just make or break everything in your life. If you could choose to find the most generous, the most positive explanation for what you feel like God is sending you, then it might just change everything. What I do know, though, is that in this game, the ball's in your court, and you get to choose. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I can't believe what you've done for us. God, and I'm sure there's loads of people here with circumstances that they're in the middle of that cloud judgment, that maybe even cast you in a negative light, and maybe they've written you off, maybe they've interpreted everything from you as negative. But God, I pray that maybe today would be a breakthrough where they would choose to see your love through whatever it is that's in the way. God, for every person here that's in a relationship that's hanging on by a thread, they have created such a negative pattern that it just feels like it's hopeless. I pray maybe today that they would make the courageous decision to go first and to choose to find a generous way to explain what they're receiving. God, I really believe that this can make or break our relationship with you and our relationships on earth. And so I just pray that every one of us would have the courage, the discernment to take the step, to be able to filter through all of the confusion and to be able to find it in ourselves because you live in us to be able to choose to believe the best. Thank you so much for Jesus. And I pray when we get confused and we get clouded, that we would just look at him. And we pray all this in his name. Amen.